Australian Universalist, what I'd like to talk about today is bigger than me, so I've also invited some panelists, and I'm going to quickly mention joining me today is my son-in-law, a trained Unitarian minister from Transylvania in Romania, there studied. Also Dr. Linda Crowder, who is a professor of anthropology at Cal State Fullerton. And I'm also going to be honoring Juana Ventura and her sister, who have set up and will help us experience a bit of the Day of the Dead from Mexico. So I am accompanied by much more distinguished panelists than my own self. However, this is, you know, my thoughts at the time, and I'd like to share them with you. Here we are again. We have our American Halloween. We adore it. Has become a $5 billion industry. We are spending, only Christmas, we are spending more home decor and money on than Halloween right now. I love it. I loved it since I was a child. It's sugary. It's hard to see. And we're exporting this holiday, according to parents. You know, it's going all over the world now. Everybody's starting, clubs are having Halloween themed nights. People are setting up Halloween around the world. So when we do something, we usually do it big and we do it right. That part of it is really good. But what I'm finding, and I'm a teaching professional, and I have to lock myself in a room with 40 teenagers every day, thank you very much. That's most people's idea of the scariest experience they have. And try to get them to actually pay attention to me and learn something while the entire culture has summoned up a huge amount of psychic and psychological energy around the Days of the Dead. Now, frankly, I don't really know why we're trying to do two things at once. My position, and I'll be trying to bring you out of it, is we should be extending our Days of the Dead and be having a hollow mass like the Christmas, and that was the old name of it. So here's some of my thoughts. We've got a lot of symbols around us. We've really codified them. We teach our kids, that's a witch, color her black, that's a pumpkin, color it orange. But we kind of think of Halloween as coming from Tim Burton's land. It's kind of like Jack's Halloween land. It just kind of comes and it's all over and then it kind of goes away. And then Christmas comes and it's all over and it goes away to wherever this distant land is. We aren't really explaining to the children the source of our own symbolism. My ancestors come from long ago and far away in the British Isles, and they would have been Celtic and Druidic, celebrating Samhain, the Feast of the Lord of the Dead, in their new year. So we don't remember that witches and wizards were wits. They were wise. They were people that knew ancient and important ways. We don't remember that the witch's pointed hat, and I have a picture of it if you want to see it later on, is actually the hat that's the traditional folk dress of a Welsh peasant woman. And if you see how she's dressed, she looks exactly like your image of a witch from the 1600s. We don't remember that heathens, bad, horrible people that don't live in the city, where the cities where the church has more control and importance, if they're on the heath, they're heathens, and they're in their little cottages, and it's time for the summon or the return of the souls. So those peasants are carving their little turnips, their meats, into little candle holders in the United States. They've gone to squash American pumpkins. But we forgot about that. They're going to put that little lighted candle in there to help their lost souls find their way home. And it's a special night, which interestingly lies exactly halfway between the fall equinox and the winter solstice on the ancient pagan solar calendar. Maybe we're wearing masks because after the Lord of the Dead comes and takes everybody back home, well, we don't really want him to confuse us. You know, we're going to hide, look like somebody else, like, you know, put on a George Bush mask. Take him some tea, okay? Something like that. So we aren't really communicating this to the kid. What the kids know is, Kevin did, right? Adam Sandler. Give us all candy. We kind of have gotten that one. Kids are very clear on that. That's not a problem. And here in Southern California, we have the world's top fantasy makers creating Halloween haunt, scary farm, and everybody in Universal Studios. I mean, we have just absolutely an explosion of this energy, but it seems to me like not so much psychological awareness of why we're doing it. So my thinking is here in Southern California, a lot of us are transplants, we're immigrants, most of us are living here. Maybe not all, but many of us are living far from the bones of our ancestors. We don't ever walk, as I did in Europe, past a graveyard every single day on the way back in to school and so forth. We will never go to a cemetery unless we get in a car, drive whereas in a lot of other places, you will see signs, you know, these kinds of things all over the place. They're part of your daily life. We still have this huge psychological need to confront and encounter and struggle and puzzle with death. So here we are, building haunted houses, putting up styrofoam graves, we're hanging dummies from our trees. If you were from another culture, would you understand that? And those of us that are teachers, and we have several in the congregation, you know how hard it is to keep the excited youth on task, because we have brought up, we have summoned out of them a huge archetype, and we aren't really helping them put it to bed later on. We're not really taking them through the whole process. So there's two ways people are coping. One is just to totally get away from it. A lot of our local churches have decided that this is a satanic holiday and that the only correct thing to do is to have safe and sane, protected fall harvest carnivals with pumpkins and leaves, but no mention of any of these elements because they might seduce us to evil, demonic habits or practices. And, you know, I wouldn't, frankly, I wouldn't get to that. So I'm not here to support demonic things. So, but again, pagan, it's a pagan festival. Well, what did pagan mean? It meant the same thing as heathen. Pagan meant people that live rurally, that live out of the big city. So I think that what we're trying to do psychologically is to undergo the kind of Kubler-Ross five stages of confronting death. And my what I'm throwing out with my other congregants and other panelists here is, are we getting far enough? Because we're getting part of the way, but I'm not sure if we're taking all of us far enough. First, we're going to be denial. Well, we're denying death. We'll put little styrofoam graves in our front yard. But those can go back in the garage when we're done. We've got fear. There's howling ghost tapes. There's dummies hanging from trees. Really, little kids are scared of Halloween. Big kids forget that. Big kids forget that now that they got this axe in their head, that it actually is a very terrifying thing. I forgot about that. Because it's cool. We've got depression roaming around our streets. Just look at the teens coming to my door. They're going to be dressed in gothic black, you know, if they bother to put on their costume at all. They still want their candy. Okay, you guys. We give you bargaining. A lot of bargaining. Dad, go away. You know, you're scary. You're on my door. Here, how about I give you this? It's actually the food of the Aztecs. The ancient Aztec food of royalty. Chocolate, go away. Okay? And we'll keep the goblins away. So we're going through anger, depression, fear, and denial. But what we're not doing is we're not quite taking the whole collective celebration through to the acceptance stage, which is the last stage. And in that regard, the Day of the Dead from Mexico, which I've promoted as a Spanish teacher for a long time, is really good. The kids wander in on the day after Halloween. Every year they ask, why can't we take the day after Halloween off? It's like the whole culture is shoving you into this huge thing. And then the next day, okay, show up, same old. Everybody knows we were all out eating candy. We're a total sugar shock. We've been the same people all night. I'm going to get shows and do this. Day of the Dead is going to actually go help people. It's going to take them into the next 2 days, All Saints Day and All Souls Day. And I think that we need more of that. So before I just wanted to point out to you that if you didn't have a chance to commemorate, we have what Mexico has set up aside. Two more days then to actually gather with the biggest festival of the year, bigger than Christmas in southern Mexico, big like Chinese New Year. Everyone's going to get together and commemorate the dead. So I'm going to place the picture of one of my dead loved ones on this community ofrenda, which is an altar to the memory of the dead. This is my mother. She died when she was 12 years old, so I'm going to add her to the collection now. And if you didn't have a chance to do it earlier, a little bit later on, you'll... when I was 12, I'm sorry. I apologize. I really... I'm getting caught in a time warp here. Let's do the time warp again. This is actually the way we're dealing with that, though. We're having fun, we're seeing ghosts and problems. But it is, of course, a deep and permanent grief in our hearts. So I'm going to put this, my mother's image, on the community ofrenda as well. And then I kind of asked myself, are other cultures or countries doing more or different with that? And so I talked to my son-in-law, born and raised in Transylvania, and also an experienced minister. He's worked with small congregations and large congregations all over Romania and in Hungary. So he's going to share with you a little bit of his memory of what was it like. Are you ready? What was it like in Transylvania? So let's take our stereotypes, put them to the side, and find out what it was really like.
before I share my memories, I want to tell you about what we celebrate on the Day of the Dead. So the Day of the Dead in Europe is originally a Christian holiday, and its origin goes back to the turn of the first century. The Day of the Dead was first held in November 2nd, 1998, and it's closely, 998, there we go, and it's closely related to the apocalyptic fear of the turn of the century. It was believed that the end of the world would come in 1000 AD, and it would be best to be in good standing with the dead should that happen. People were required to light a candle on or next to a grave so that the poor shivering souls could warm up. In the Hungarian Transylvanian culture, there are many myths and fictitious beliefs surrounding this custom. Some say that you need to light a candle or the torch so that the souls that escape during the day can find their way back to the grave and won't haunt the living. Another belief says that the light of the candle is a cleansing fire that helps the souls repent and gain eternal forgiveness. In a remote place in Hungary, each family member would light a candle on the Day of the Dead, and it was believed that whoever's candle burned fastest would pass away first. It's a gruesome picture right there. Another custom is restoring, cleaning, and decorating the family graves with flowers and crowns. This is so that when the souls come home to visit their living relatives on the Day of the Dead, they will find their graves nice and neat. This will motivate them to return to their graves instead of haunting the living. Other families would put a festive table with fresh bread, water, and salt for the visiting soul. During the Day of the Dead, the living were prohibited from working, especially not in the fields where they may disturb the dead. Laundry washing was also prohibited, and this is very interesting, because it was believed that the soul might get in the water and leave a yellow stain on the sheet. These were only a few of the customs of the Day of the Dead in the Hungarian culture. But these customs and beliefs changed in time, and today during the Day of the Dead we commemorate our ancestors, our family members that passed away. On November 1st, on 2nd, at 6 o'clock, the bells of the church toll, and the families gather at their local churches for a short sermon and prayer. After the sermon, the families take part in a procession called the lighting, or the way, that leads every family to their family grave that has been previously restored, cleaned, and decorated by a man in the family. They then light a candle and place them on the grave. The elders start sharing memories, stories about those who passed away. The ceremony ends in a prayer, followed by a long moment of silence. After finishing at one grave, the family goes to visit the graves of other relatives, good friends, poets, artists. This holiday is very unique and important to me because during that short moment of silence, the whole family is reunited again and the circle of life is complete. At that moment, everybody makes peace and faces the reality of death. Every year I was growing up, this holiday meant different things to me. As a child, I didn't understand why what we are doing in the cemetery, wasting all those candles and flowers on the ground. But the candy and the roasted chestnuts that were sold at the entrance of the cemetery, and the fact that I could stay up after a curfew were exciting. As a teenager, it was very dramatic to take a long walk in the cemetery at night with your friends and visit the graves of your favorite poet, artist, or poet. As I grew up, I became the man who had to clean the family graves. And that wasn't as much fun as the candies. And sometimes really creepy when you find a skeleton lying next to your grandma's grave and you just pick it up and calling. Yeah, that was interesting. But still a big honor to me. It was a big honor to be the man who actually cleans the grave. And through these years, one thing never changed though. Through the mystical glow of the candles and the dark
a chance to look at the whole ceremony and why we're doing it. I asked Dr. Linda Prater to share with us some thoughts from the Eastern mind. Let's open up our consciousness to a different point of view.
Well, I'd like to thank Christina for inviting me here today. Little did she know that I'm still recovering from a cold, so I'm an example of what the dead looks like when they come back. So I'll talk as long as I can, but please bear with me if I give out. In China, there is no Halloween where the dead comes back, because for one reason, they never left. Okay, for the Chinese who believe in ancestor reverence, it's a group-oriented, collective culture. When a person dies, they just go into another stage or phase of existence. It's like there's a gauzy curtain, and this is your physical existence, and then and when you die, you go on the other side of the curtain. And the spirit world is a mirror reflection of the physical world. So that's why you've often seen, if you've ever gone into Chinatown for your chop suey, there are often shops that sell paper offerings, and you'll see models, really stunning, intricate examples of folk art, of paper mache figures that are supposed to represent servants to help you in the afterlife. You'll have Mercedes-Benz, cell phones, mahjong sets, karaoke machines, trunks full of clothes, watches, shoes, a house. And these homes, they're stunning. They actually have furniture inside that's to scale. And some of these offerings, paper offerings, they cost hundreds of dollars, and they're burnt at the grave to send to the spirit world for the person to use in the next life. So just like in this world, we take care of each other as family members, that doesn't change once you die and you're in the spirit world. So there is an ongoing interactive relationship between the living and the dead. And it's the obligation of the family to continually feed the ancestors. Now, one reason they haven't left is because the Chinese are very practical and they have all their bases covered. A person just doesn't have one soul. That's way too simple. Okay, now, depending on the philosophy and the time period of the philosophy, different sects, there can be as many as 12 aspects to a person's soul. But generally speaking, for folk beliefs and for general practice for the dead, there are three aspects. One resides in the grave, which is why you take offerings to the grave. One resides in the soul tablet or ancestral tablet, which is imbued with a red dot, which indicates the soul or eye of the person. And that remains in the home. Or, if your home is too crowded, it's not very big, and you don't like smelling up your house with incense smoke, you pay the temple to take care of your ancestors. The old folks' home is a temple. And then the third aspect takes care of traveling through the Buddhist hells and eventually getting into paradise. So that's how the Chinese were able to incorporate all these different philosophies, from animistic folk beliefs, ancestor worship, and then the Buddhist and Taoist influences. And of course, Buddhism was a foreign influence that came in and became very much part of Chinese culture. So you have your ancestor in your home with you all the time if you keep the tablet there. And what you would do is every morning, you might light some incense or you'll just pay respect by making three small bows to the tablet. You also might leave some fruit there or, leftover whatever, foods that the family ate. You would also let your dead family member partake as well. And so you never forget your family member. They're still your family. Just because they're dead doesn't mean that they're gone. And when I say that there's an interactive relationship. It is reciprocal in terms of exchange. It's still, you take care of me and I'll take care of you. So it's very important to continually make offerings, beginning with a very good funeral, doing all the proper rituals for the proper disposal of the body, to situate it well in a grave that possibly is feng shui oriented, and then making sure that the soul is well placed, one aspect of the soul, in the grave. And then after that, you continually make offerings to the deceased. And if there's good feng shui and you've done your filial duty to your ancestors, they will continue to bless the family. So it's an ongoing thing. There is a Memorial Day. Actually, there's two Memorial Days, official community ones in traditional China. The big one is in April. It's Qingming, the spring grave cleaning festival. And that's when everyone gets out, you know, the winter is thawing, and people come out with picnic baskets, and they go to the cemetery, clean the graves, and then they have basically an outing there. But it's not like they're expecting the dead to come back. They're going to join the dead, join that aspect of the soul that resides in the grave. Now, in the fall, right before winter, and it changes according to the lunar date, there's also a fall aspect of this Memorial Day, this grave cleaning. But I've been told nobody really does it because it's too cold to go out to the cemetery. So they wait until once a year at Qingming to do it. And, you know, again, it's a reminder that we always take care of our family members. And this brought to me certain thoughts that, you know, why is this different, this reciprocal exchange, interactive relationship? Why don't we have that as much in the West, in America especially? And I'm thinking, okay, I was raised Christian. My destiny, my spiritual welfare is based totally on how I lived my life, the decisions I made. It was my choice that predestines where I'll be once I die. And it's either to heaven or to hell, and then that's it. You know, that person is gone out of our life, out of our existence. I'm in either heaven or hell, and there's nothing that people on earth can really do for me anymore. There are some religions like the Mormons and the Catholics that feel like, well, if you say certain masses and rituals, then it does affect the welfare of the person who's already died. But we believe a lot in individualism and individual choice. We're also a very individual-centered society, whereas in China, it's very much, as I said earlier, a group-centered, collective society, and family is everything. So we continue to take care of our family members, and they continue to be part of us, and that's part of the lineage. Many generations, that is the ideal in China, that we remember our ancestors. I think that's it for now, but we can talk more later. Thank you.
I'll conclude my thoughts, and then we'll have about 7 minutes if you'd like to maybe an extra comment or share on the dialogue that we brought up. First off, I had a baby ethical dilemma as a child. In the 1960s, they started the new idea of trick-or-treating for UNICEF. And I knew that good children would go out trick-or-treating for UNICEF and not ask for candy. Now, this is asking a lot of a child that always wanted to be good. I really, really, really wanted to be a good child. But when push comes to shove, am I giving up the candy? I am not. And every year, I pick up that little box, take it home, put it under my bed, and get my snack and go get candy. So I appreciate my new church for giving the kids the opportunity to do both, to collect for the International Children's Fund as well as, well, for their candy. And finally, Tim Burton's movie, The Corpse Bride, the dead come back and invade the land of the living. They respond in horror until a little boy goes, "What is this?" has come back to life, Grandpa. So the dead are our loved ones and ceremonies that show they are dear to our hearts, are healthy and life-affirming. Let's spend time with the dead and light their